Welcome to Back to Health with Dr. Cale Copeland. He has been a chiropractic provider to the Victoria Grizzlies Junior A Hockey Club for 9 seasons and involved in healthcare for over 2 decades. Get ready to be inspired to greater vitality, performance, energy, and health as he interviews experts every 2 weeks. Now here's Dr. Cale.
Hey everyone, this is Dr. Cale Copeland and I'm your host for Back to Health. Thank you for being here. This is episode number 16 and today I'll be speaking with chiropractor Dr. Brett Winchester. You know, I recently saw him speak at a conference I attended in Las Vegas and I was blown away by him and I was able to track him down. So I'm pumped to have him on the show today. Now, before he joins us, if you have any questions or you require assistance at any time at Victoria Family Chiropractic, call us 250-592-5553 or online at vfchiro.com. So here's a little about Dr. Brett. When he's not practicing at Winchester Spine and Sport, he's teaching around the globe. In 2015, he lectured in 6 countries, conducting 30 seminars for doctors, students, and therapists. Dr. Winchester currently serves as the team chiropractor for the St. Louis Cardinals in the Major Leagues of Baseball. He teaches at Logan University in its College of Chiropractic, the Motion Palpation Institute, Dynamic Neuromuscular Stabilization, and the Chiropractic Rehabilitation Diplomat, to name a few. Dr. Winchester's studies and lectures have taken him to England, Prague, Chile, Sweden, Norway, Canada, and across the United States to teach the latest manual therapy research and techniques. In his free time, he enjoys spending time with his wife, Sherry, and his children, Grace and Wade. His hobbies include cycling, snow and water skiing, soccer, tennis, and reading. Dr. Winchester received his Doctor of Chiropractic degree from Logan College of Chiropractic. For more information about Brett, please visit his website at winspineandsport.com. Dr. Brett, thanks for being here and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Cale.
Yeah, I'm excited. So, you know, when I saw you speak, I think the thing that captured my interest the most was that you seem to have a desire for clinical excellence and being the best you can be. You know, so where did that come from?
I think just from the very, very beginning, I think as chiropractors, we all probably just have a little bit of an inferiority complex. So I think like just trying to create space for myself and just, you know, in my mind, I just always kind of want to push the limits of what's possible for our profession and for chiropractors. So I think when I first started, I kind of just sat down and tried to figure out, like, to get really good at what I'm doing, what do I need to do? And so I did a bunch of research on mastering whatever it is, whether that's a sport or a musician or a game or, you know, business, whatever it could be. And I start to try to understand like what these people did every day of their life to get them to that point. And really what it ends up being is it's kind of an understanding that whatever your career is, it's basically a journey and you really got to revel in the journey. And when you know, run up against roadblocks or failures, just kind of understanding that those are moments to learn. And that's kind of been my approach. So as I've moved along, you know, I just a constant quest to get better at what I do. And that has gotten me to this point, and I'm right in the middle of my journey. So I just had my 41st birthday last week. So I am, actively in the process, I would say.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I think when I saw you speak, it was like one of the first times that I can recall in recent history where someone was like focused on giving the finest chiropractic adjustment. And, you know, and it was awesome. And because I thought, wow, that's, you know, and it's funny since I was at Parker and I saw you, you know, definitely have been working on making sure I'm giving the finest chiropractic adjustments. And it's interesting too, you know, when you were talking about chiropractic, I mean, I don't know for our listeners if this is that interesting, but the importance of not only being able to adjust, but also the importance of, you know, knowing where to adjust, like being able to feel, right?
Oh, absolutely. And then the other thing that, like, in our profession, no one thinks about, but also how you articulate what you do, what you say to your patient, and just kind of noticing, like, okay, I said it this way, that they didn't really grab onto that. So next time, I'm just going to tweak my verbiage a little bit and then see if I can get a better response out of them. So when we say, like, you're growing, it's you're growing with your skill set with whatever you're doing, but then I think you're also growing in other areas where people don't realize, you know. So your ability to communicate, no matter whether you're a chiropractor or you're a salesman or whatever you're doing, I mean, one of the most important things you can do is to convey your message well. And I think, like, it's real easy to tell if you're able to do that, because they're, if it's a patient, they're listening to you. If you're in sales, they're buying from you. It's, you know, no matter what your job is, it always involves being a good communicator of information.
Yeah, isn't that massive? Yeah, no, it's funny. Actually, today on Tuesdays in my office, we do our team meetings, and we oftentimes review that kind of stuff, you know, just to make sure we're speaking properly and we're saying the right things and people can understand us. So that's great.
Okay, yeah, listen. We do the same. Like, at our staff meetings, it's, like, really, really important. Like, the whole operation understands that. So, like, in our field, Kale, I think it's easy to just think about, like, what the, you know, the people who are treating the patients are doing, but like in our office, it's like the treatment starts the second they walk into the office. So actually the first healthcare provider is the person who's sitting at the front desk. So what they say to that patient is really, really important. What I always tell them is, because not everyone, of course, is as cordial as they should be when they walk in, but we don't know what they've been through. We don't know how long they've been in pain. And so we have to remember that when we are communicating with people. And so I think that's a really important point also, because it's easy to get kind of upset when someone else comes into the office and, you know, they might be having a bad day, but we just got to kind of catch them where they're at, and hopefully we can turn that around for them. So.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny, in a chiropractic office, you know, generally people are pretty happy. You know, they're healthy, but you're right. When people come in and they're hurting, absolutely, just that's important, just to kind of step back and just know where people are at, and that's huge. So yeah. My next question was, you know, I'm not sure how many, you know, Cardinals fans are listening. There may be more Jays fans here, but just interested to hear how you got involved with the Cardinals.
Yeah, so I started, my first consulting job with the Cardinals started in 2011. So then that just kind of moved along. And then I've been full-time with them now 3 years. So before that, I was consulting with other Major League Baseball teams. And then our head trainer, Adam Olson, he got promoted to head trainer. And him and I had a real, real good relationship. And he had been to some seminars that I had put on. So he asked me to join the team, so that's kind of how I got into it. It's interesting, because I'm still, I would say, like, baseball is not my favorite sport, but it's where my niche is, and it's led me to a lot of different offshoots. So I also have a company with one of my or my partner in that is a guy named Tyler White, where we look at people or pitchers who have injured arms. So if somebody has an injured elbow or shoulder, then, you know, they need an explanation of why that is. So sometimes it can be on the musculoskeletal side of things, but a lot of times it ends up being like a biomechanical fault they have.
Right.
So him and I work together, besides the whole Cardinal thing, and trying to figure out why these people are injuring their arms. As people may or may not know who are listening to this, there's an epidemic problem in not only professional baseball, but baseball in general, in tearing their UCL ligament in their elbow. So that, you know, most people have heard of Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
So we try to figure out, like, why, you know, that is occurring. And we think we have a pretty good understanding of why that is occurring. So, yeah, but that's how the whole Cardinals job evolved. And, yep, that's where we're at.
That's awesome. So, you know, you just piqued my interest there when you talked about the, you know, the ulnar collateral ligament in Tommy John surgery. So, is chiropractic playing a role in that, or is that more kind of soft tissue-y sort of
rehab stuff?
Yeah,
I think that
goes
to your original question, which I think chiropractic, you know, can be, that's a really neat thing about our profession. We always say it's kind of like the Wild Wild West, and that, like, it can take you to so many different offshoots. So to answer your question directly, I would say, yes, absolutely it is. But it also, you know, you got to have an understanding of baseball mechanics. You got to have an understanding of, you know, how the body stabilizes itself. So I would put that under the umbrella of chiropractic. Some people might disagree, but, that's the wonderful thing about our profession, is, like, you can just get off into a tangent and, you know, and still be doing what we do, but under kind of a different umbrella, sort of. So.
Yeah, that's so great. And so with the St. Louis Cardinals, are you traveling with the team? Like, are you adjusting the players? Do the players come see you if they want? Like, how does that kind of work?
So contractually, I don't travel with them unless there was like a reason for me to travel with them. So meaning like when people get hurt, they usually are going to be on the disabled list and be back in St. Louis anyways.
Right.
So there's no travel during the regular season, but I'm there every home game 5 hours before the start of the game.
Wow.
And then if we get to the playoffs, then the playoffs and World Series, then obviously then I do travel. So
okay,
it really works out well because with, you know, I have two private practices and with some other travel, there would be no way for me to travel with them during the season, especially like they'll be gone. I mean, they'll be gone 10 days at a time sometimes, you know, so that's not possible. But yeah, so then the day of the game, any chiropractic services that are needed, that's a given. And then I also work hand in hand with our training staff. So we have a great set of trainers and physical therapists. So I like to think of it, we're all kind of together. So it's not just like the chiropractor sitting over in the corner. It's we all work together on many different cases. So it's integrated really, really well. So it's been just an amazing experience.
That's awesome. I think that's a key thing is that working as a team, right? And that, you know, a lot of chiropractors are used to being sort of, you know, lone wolves, but you know, when you're in a professional environment like that or with a team, you know, you're a part of the team and there's other healthcare providers. So that's awesome. That's great.
Yeah. Like, if it's done well, I mean, I think should go into it unselfishly and just think it's not about me. It's not about me being a hero. It's more about what can we do to make this team better? And what can we do to make this individual player better and kind of check your ego at the door? And, you know, I think that's what people who have the culture right on the medical team, they do that really, really well. And I think that's what it takes.
Yeah, that's enormous. Well, thanks a lot for sharing that. So another thing I wanted to touch on that you spoke about in Vegas was you were talking about the core. So when I'm talking about the core to listeners, I mean like, you know, the muscles that stabilize the spine and the pelvis, that kind of thing. But you were mentioning something about, you know, at the time of impact in say sports with like when you're hitting a baseball or even a ping pong ball or a soccer ball, you talked about that. Do you mind like talking a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it's what's kind of crazy is that it's actually against all conventional wisdom. So what most people think is correct, which is like sucking in or holding, you know, the abdominal wall inward, is actually the worst thing we can do and destabilizes everything.
Wow.
So for a lot of our patients and clients, really the first thing we teach them is how to breathe correctly. So if someone breathes in the right stereotype, essentially the abdominal wall is like a balloon. So as the lungs fill up with air, the abdominal wall is actually pushing outward.
Right.
And that's the first step, is just to get the breathing right. We always say, like, in our clinic setting, because we see so many pain syndromes, that probably 95% of our patients are not breathing in the right stereotype. So that's the first thing we fix, because that's going to be kind of a prerequisite to the next thing, which is being able to generate the right amount of intra-abdominal pressure. So that means being able to actually push the abdominal wall eccentrically outward. And that is the most stable situation. So if I just gave you some examples. So one of my buddies that I teach with, he got to work with a guy named Donnie Thompson, who's one of the strongest power lifters in the world. And just as an example, he said, if I put a weight belt on him and I put my hand down in between his belt and his back during the moment of the lift, he said, it wouldn't break my fingers. It would shatter my fingers.
Wow.
So meaning the strongest people in the world. So that's the end of the extreme. They're some of the best in the world at being able to push their abdominal wall outward.
Isn't that interesting?
It is so interesting. So then that's the extreme example under load. And then you can just kind of plug in whatever sport you're into, including given an adjustment, and know how much outward force needs to be generated to stabilize your spine correctly. Because really, a really healthy way to think of it is you have your core muscles. So that's what's creating the platform for all the muscles in your extremities to be able to explode from.
So
true. If you don't have the origin of these muscles stabilized correctly, we always say it's kind of like shooting a cannon off a canoe. So you can you can still do your activity, but it's just not quite as effective. Right. Or the other example I always use is a backhoe. So like if you get on YouTube, you can always see examples of people who forget to put their outriggers down before they start scooping with the bucket. And of course, the you know the whole cab tips over then. So that's exactly how muscles work. We need to put the outriggers down first to stabilize, and then we'll have a lot of purchasing power with the scoop on the backhoe. But the muscular system works exactly the same. So some of us were innately born to know how to do that. Like they're the lucky ones. The rest of us, we have to have someone like myself or you show our athletes and our patients what's right. So that's what makes the best athletes in the world, but it's also what makes people who have really healthy low backs also be able to function with.
That is awesome. I guess, you know, this is kind of leading into my next question, but I want to talk about the breathing because, man, do I ever see this in practice. And obviously, a lot of us chiropractors do, but breathing is a huge issue. And it's funny, in doing a bunch of these podcasts now, it's something that's come up repeatedly, and it's really interesting. So just real quickly for our listeners, because I guess this leads into my next question, like, do you want to describe kind of healthy breathing on a simple level for people?
Yeah, so I would say, like, if I'm working with a lay person or someone who doesn't know this before, it's, you know, usually what I'll do is I'll put some kind of tactile stimulus around their belly button or maybe a little bit below their belly button. So maybe a loose-fitting belt or a TheraBand or something like that.
And yep.
Then what we imagine is, so as they take a breath in, we want them breathing out into that band. And it's actually not just forward, Kale. It's forward, lateral, and posteriorly.
Okay.
So, you know, and what's going to end up happening is you learn this, they're going to completely hyperventilate and over-respire. And that's totally fine in the beginning because we just want them to kind of feel what's right. And then slowly but surely, you know, they can start dialing it back down to what's necessary for normal breathing rates. But that, I think, is, you know, the starting point. And then so everyone's got like a little bit different brain as far as their ability to do this well or do this not well. So you just got to kind of meet the person where they're at and just kind of understand that, like, some, we call them like neurologic savants. Sometimes like people are so good at it. And then, you know, the next patient you work with, like, they just can't figure it out. And it's easy to get frustrated with them. But it I mean, that's just motor learning. So it's just the process that it takes to get better at it. But I'll give you a really good example of, so the first year with the Cardinals, I'd worked with a guy, you know, quite extensively who had an oblique injury. And we got done. I mean, I'd worked a lot with him because he was on the DL. And so he, you know, an hour a day, I was, you know, training him how to use his abdominal muscles well. And he did great, by the way. He had an awesome brain for it. It all went great. And then, so just for the hell of it, the last day we're like, he grabbed a bat actually. And so he was just kind of like, you know, acting like he was, you know, about to swing in front of the mirror. And it was interesting. So all that time I worked with him, then he went right back to sucking his stomach in, which is the wrong stereotype.
Weird.
So that had a really good lesson for me at that point, which was, you know, just because you're telling them, you know, something in the clinical setting, it's not always a guarantee that that's happening in their life or their sport. So then it's really, like I said, it was just an epiphany moment for me to understand that I probably need to be better at explain what this information means for them in their life or their sport or whatever it might be, because I actually kind of now believe that there's another way to be the best athlete in whatever sport you're playing if you're not innately born with it. Like, again, sometimes people have a great brain to do the activity. They just need somebody to explain them what's right. And because it's not within your own body, you've never felt it the right way. And because of that, then you just think that, you know, that's just as good as it can be. And there's always capacity for growth. So
it's awesome. And
I would just add on, that's not just for your physical. That's also for your ability to learn, your ability, you know, all cognitive function. I think, especially like in the American school system, it's, you know, to do well is a lot about rote memorization and things like that. So just because you have a great memory doesn't always mean that you're a great critical thinking. But to be successful in schooling is a lot about like building associations with different memories. So you know, like a lot of times when students, you know, they may not do well in the American school system, not because they're not intelligent, only because no one has pointed out to them specifically on how to learn. So it's really kind of a cool thought, because it's not really about athletic function. It's also about like cognitive abilities also. So.
Wow. I mean, I feel like there's so many directions I could go with that, but I think for our listeners too, like, even if you're not an athlete, this idea about kind of, I'm not sure the word of, contracting your core, because it is kind of bracing your core, maybe a better word to put it, is great if you're lifting up, you know, you're lifting a wheelbarrow, or you're shoveling, or you're, you know, you're picking up your kid, or you're, you know, you're a major league player and you're about to hit a baseball. It's great. So, and it's funny too, I remember, you know, working out with a guy who's a powerlifter as well. And I've studied, kind of like you, I've studied a lot of these powerlifters, but, it's interesting how he was saying, you know, right at the moment of lifting, he'd kind of hold his breath and kind of push. And it was like, he would find that he would get so much more power from that. And I found the same thing. And it's just, I think, trying to convey that to people. But getting back to breathing, I mean, one of the things you talked about in Vegas, which I thought was awesome, was that, you know, when you breathe, it does, it moves your organs around, and it's almost like a, you know, a massage. And I think that there's so much more to breathing. It's so good for hormones and stabilizing nerves. So what a fantastic topic, and just pumped you got into that.
Yeah. So when someone breathes with the correct stereotype that we've been talking about, so if we just use your kidney as an example, so every time you take a breath, your kidney's going to descend about 3 centimeters if we do it correctly.
Wow.
If we do it incorrectly, then basically the kidney stays exactly where it's at.
Wow.
So if, like, we look at ultrasound at a kidney and someone who's breathing right, I mean, you literally just see the kidney going up and down, and, you know, the average person is going to be like, well, why does it matter? But what we know now is actually organ movement is really important for organ function. So like that kidney going up and down is really important for like the internal function of our internal organs, not just the kidney, the liver, all organs, the spleen are included. So if you ever, like, even if you just YouTubed or Googled, like, the abdominal contents, you would see everything fits in together perfectly like a puzzle. So with that, we have, with the right respiration, we have sliding of the internal organs against each other. And that sliding is actually helps improve the function of our internal organs. So respiration, as you said, it's important for everything that I just mentioned. But also, if we breathe correctly, you almost have like a natural motion that's occurring through your costo transverse joints, your costo vertebral joint, all your spinal joints. And so that's why it becomes important. It's also one of the reasons why people come to see, like myself or you, Kale, because they have restricted joints, because they don't respire correctly. Therefore, that natural movement's not occurring through the articulations in the body.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I've had a lot of people talk about breathing and how their bowels are working better. It's amazing. And I think too, you know, when you and I see people, and maybe even athletes, you know, if they're under stress, oftentimes I notice with their breathing, they hold their breath, or they take very shallow breaths, and their breathing is sort of, doesn't have any flow to it. And, anyway, I don't want to go too much overboard. Listen, couple more questions. So obviously you and I are both pretty interested in kind of human optimization. I know this is a big question, but in your experience, what are some of the most important factors in us being healthy and us sort of optimizing ourselves and our performance?
Yeah, so I think there is basically 3 tenets, and it's not just for people who are in the healthcare profession. I think it'd be anyone who's attempting to be successful in their life. And I think it does start with, you know, what you put in your body. So being able to, you know, eat the right foods is really important. So we recommend, you know, like just a paleo diet at the very least. I mean, there's a whole movement now into a ketogenic diet. I don't want to get off into that tangent, but I mean, if I could just keep it really simple, I think people can really keep systemic inflammation out of their diet if it consists of meat, fruit, vegetables, nuts, and eggs. Said a different way, you're basically removing grain, wheat, dairy products, sugar.
Yeah.
So that is like, if we can convince our patients to eat in that diet stereotype, I mean, so many things get right in their life, you know, across the board. So And then that's not even like that in itself sometimes isn't enough. And then like we can use like a branch of chiropractic medicine, which we call now functional medicine. So, you know, there's still other things that can be done even when you're eating that well. But I think that's like that's a good starting point. Yeah. The second thing would be to, you know, move your body every day. So that would be, you know, some form of resistance training or, you know, some kind of cardiovascular work. So that could be riding a bike. That could be, you know, going out on a run. That could be, you know, swimming, whatever it is you're into. And honestly, the more we're learning about on the training side of things, the variety of movement is what's really, really important.
So okay, cool.
Yeah. So like, I mean, as much as like people like, you know, you have your group of runners or your cyclists, it's really good to convince them to try to like, you know, do different areas. So maybe, you know, if you like to bike, you bike today, but tomorrow you row or the next day you go on a little bit of a run, you know? So, but the thing that like blew my mind, I started teaching running seminars a while back. And when I dived into it, I found exactly the opposite of what I was expecting to find, which was actually running is not bad for you. Like the famous study that was done at Stanford, then there was another Danish study. Like they looked at, you know, thousands of runners literally. And what they determined was actually running is good for you. But here's like a really crazy point. Like there's a threshold, which I think it's 15 miles. Don't quote me on that, but it's close to 15 miles a week. So if you run less than 15 miles a week or at 15 miles a week, then you can add years to your life. But if you run more than that, it's actually detrimental.
Wow.
But if you think about it, it actually makes sense. It's like, you know, like, for example, if you like red wine. So if you drink a glass of red wine a day, there's plenty of research to say that there's health benefits to that. But if you drink two bottles of wine a day, then that's a problem. You know, so I mean, it's like everything in life and in moderation, including moderation, as they say. But so that would be the second part of it. I think the third part that is the hardest thing to change in people is your ability to control your thoughts and to think good things and to think in healthy ways. And I mean, so when they look at centenarians, which is people who have lived to be over 100, the most important thing in their life is good relationships. So that obviously, I mean, the probably the most important one for most people is a marriage, if you're in a marriage. So, and then you can just like look at relationships outside of that. So that would be your friends, your network of friends, your social structure. And then it's really important to have friends across, you know, all different socioeconomic statuses and, you know, all different, you know, friends in all different places, basically. That way you have a real healthy influence of different perspectives. So I think like it's never really talked about, but like your relationships in your life are really important for that component of thinking well. And then the other part of that is like, and you and I are lucky because we have a job that makes it easy to do this, but you need something that rips you out of bed every day. So if you don't have that passion for something, then, you know, you need to either find a different career or, you know, just, I think my experience has been people who are really healthy mentally, like they just have a huge passion for life. And, I read a book recently and they were actually saying like, they were just talking about like what you are attracted to. And they were saying that like, actually more than like any physical qualities, a human being, like what's most sexually attracted for people is that other person is just has a ton of passion for whatever it is.
They're fired
so
up.
So it's kind of like an interesting thing. Yeah. So, I think a really important, understated quality of a human being is to like, have something that you care about. I always use the example, like if you sit down, if someone sat next to you on a plane, would you be interesting to talk to,
yeah.
You know, or like at a cocktail party, are people dying to talk to you or are you just kind of off by yourself? You know, so it's like, it's really, you know, interesting self perspective to see kind of like the vibe you're putting out to the world, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, wow, I didn't see it going that way. But the relationships are huge, and obviously that's tricky. That's a life's work, right? And but the reason for living and something you care about, that's fantastic. Listen, we're running out of time, but I just wanted to touch on one thing. I mean, you teach at a chiropractic college. I'm super grateful for this profession. You are too. You know, obviously we're in different countries. You're in the States. I'm here in Canada. But you know, you're kind of at the grassroots level teaching chiropractic, and yet you're also high up in the profession. Where do you see the profession heading?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because now we have more and more people who are seeing the importance of manipulation. So I see, you know, now we have physical therapists. We even have, like, in the States, I don't know how it is in Canada, but, like, even our athletic trainers can manipulate.
Okay.
Medical doctors, obviously osteopaths. So, you know, instead of, like, trying to block manipulation from everywhere, I tell my students and people who are listening, I think we just need to continue to raise the bar of what chiropractors do. I think that's the answer, you know? So, I think the future is so incredibly bright, you know, as long as we keep that as our goal, because again, like with it being such a wide spectrum of what's possible for the chiropractor, I have people at my office, they only do functional medicine. So they're chiropractors, but they only do that. They don't do any of the manual side of things.
Right.
So, you know, there's just so many different offshoots. And I think now because of the internet and just because of people, you know, looking for other alternatives to their healthcare, like actually the patients are driving it. Like my functional medicine lady is on a 5-month waiting list right now because It's like the perfect storm of economics. Like there's so much demand and there's not enough supply right now for that. So, that will probably normalize at some point. But my point is that people are wanting a more holistic way to, get themselves better. And that's not a knock on Western medicine, because Western medicine, when we need it, is amazing.
It's amazing.
It's just we feel that a lot of times our patients enter the funnel in the wrong direction. So we'd rather them start with us. And then when we're unable to help them with, you know, drugs and surgery, then obviously we can make the right referrals. So,
yeah, wouldn't that be an amazing world where sort of like – you know, there was almost a triage system where sort of, you know, that started with natural things like chiropractic, because chiropractic can help with so much, but that's great. Listen, unfortunately, we're out of time. Brett, that was awesome. Thanks so much for joining me today. To anyone listening, I really hope you got inspired. I'm sure you did, and you take your life and your health to another level. Brett, thanks again.
Oh, no problem, Kale. Great beating you in Vegas.
Yeah, so to all the listeners, we look forward to you being with us again for the next episode of Back to Health.
Thanks for listening. We hope you have enjoyed this episode. For more information about Dr. Kale, visit his website, vfchiro.com, where you can read his blog and hit links to his YouTube channel and Facebook page for videos and more. Book an appointment with Dr. Kale today at Victoria Family Chiropractic by calling 250-592-5553 and get started on a path to being your best.